greetings from Orchard Beach in the Bronx.
I love Orchard Beach, man.
Do you?
Orchard no, you Beach. Do not.
City Island, no. Dude? City Island's a great
well,
time.
Well, this is the Bronx.
Yeah.
Well, City Island is technically the Bronx, yes, too, yes, but that's yeah. an island. But Orchard Beach is on the shore of the
yeah,
Bronx.
Yeah, no, you don't
right?
you don't want to go to Orchard Beach, man.
It's one of the only beaches we got, though.
No, man, there was a diaper next to me last time I went there, man, just floating around.
I'll tell you what, though, man, City Island seafood, oh.
Oh, you go to the lobster box, bro?
Oh, dude, there's like four lobster boxes. They were all out yeah, there. Yeah. No, we went, my wife and I went Memorial Day weekend. We went out to City Island. You get some fucking fried seafood, dude. Oh,
ooh,
it's yeah. outrageously good.
Ooh, I like that idea.
Really good, dirt cheap. Wish I was eating it now. Instead, I'm just fucking sweating balls mm-hmm. going to work in the mm-hmm. summertime.
Eating dirt on your workday commute.
But we are here, of course, to continue entertaining through the summer vacation we're not having. This is an old episode. This is The Haunting.
It's a real old episode.
We're talking like episode, what, 29?
29, I think so.
You'll yeah. hear Jesus. A lot of more hope in our voices.
Yeah, we sound a lot younger.
Younger, dumber, and yeah. I
more
guess.
Sober.
No, I don't know about yeah. that. We kind
for
of...
me anyway, it's the exact opposite.
Oh yeah, that was a real problem.
It was a problem.
You're like falling asleep during tapings.
It was. I can't believe. Yeah. Anyway,
listen. I can't believe you're alive right now.
Yeah,
honestly, congratulations.
Yeah, the liver transplant worked. In.
Take that, little orphan. So this is, we're talking
Lily
Baby
Taylor's
Ghost.
Mad Mom, I believe,
oh,
is
yeah.
the big character
yep.
in this episode.
Of course. Liam Neeson talking to Todd.
Oh, yeah.
That's happening. Owen Wilson, he's in this movie
oh,
getting
yeah,
decapitated.
He's getting lost in hallways.
Wearing all sorts of Gap sweaters.
Oh, it's the year 1990 whatever all the time. Like, Catherine Zeta-Jones is in this film.
Yeah, remember her? Mm-hmm. Anyone else yeah. of note in this movie?
Oh, Michael Douglas's wife. Oh, wait. That's Catherine.
No, Bruce Dern.
Hey, Bruce Dern, man. I yeah. love Bruce Dern. Oh, I yeah. met Bruce Dern. He's one of the nicest people.
Oh, really? Were you yeah. schmucking weed?
Oh, schmucking weed, man. We're going to do this Q&A for Nebraska and then schmuck some weed out in the parking lot. He was a sweet man. He's in this movie for about 8 seconds. That's my biggest problem with The Haunting. Oh, not yeah. enough goddamn Bruce Dern.
You know, everything needs a little more Dern.
That's mm-hmm. true. So please enjoy our old-ass episode on The Haunting.
Yeah, Incredibly Lame pretty much sums it up, I think.
We're going out with a dud.
But we finally got to a ghost movie.
Yeah, this movie's spooky.
It's very spooky. It's from the spooky year 1999. The film is The Haunting, directed by Jan Dubon.
Oh. That sounds really classy, actually, when you say it like that.
Yeah, it does, right? But then you watch this movie, and it's like, well, this guy can't have that much class. You're directing this movie. You're
not
the
all
fucking DP on Lethal Weapon 3 and so on.
And Die Hard. And
he DP'd Die Hard?
Yeah, and okay. Leonard Part... What was that?
Leonard Part 6?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
The Cosby flick. Yeah. That's like an infamous disaster.
He also directed the Laura Croft sequel.
Ooh, Cradle of Filth? No, Cradle of Life.
No, you're thinking of Lara Croft Boob Raider, which was on the Spice Channel in 1996. The sequel, Cradle of Filth.
The season. Nah. Anyway, he also directed Speed and Twister and Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Ooh. Yeah, those are some fucking lackluster credits. So
the whole Tomb Raider Speed's video okay. game phenomenon was just about people looking at a girl's butt, right? Like that's
well,
kind of
no,
the whole
it was
thing.
Butt. It was boobs too, because that was like
oh, right,
that
she
was
had like jumbo ones, right? That were like,
yeah, she had
those
huge
pixels
boobs.
Were like spilling over.
And what it was like it was the first time video games were like. You know, like her boobs shook when she walked.
Yeah, that was the big technological, the towering technological achievement for that game.
Yeah, it's pretty lame, but that's why people, they fucking ate that shit up.
I didn't see the appeal.
No, I never played those games.
I mean, it
was
boring as sin.
Boobs jiggle in real life, too, you know?
They do.
For that, I'll watch Roswell, which I did.
What's
TV
Roswell
show?
Got to do with anything?
Roswell had some ladies on it. Had Catherine, the birth of Catherine Heigl.
Oh, well, then fuck that show in the mouth.
So The Haunting, Steve, what are we dealing with here? Who's getting haunted? Why are they getting haunted?
It's based on a book by Shirley Jackson, who wrote The Lottery, who everyone read in high school.
It's not a fucking great short story. Why wouldn't you read it?
That's a spooky short story. You want to talk about spooktacular?
That's spookier than this movie.
Yes.
Well, as is the book. It's about Liam Neeson plays a doctor who's kind of like a reverse Jonathan Crane from the Batman. Like, he's trying to say that fear isn't powerful, that we can get over it. So he's like, I'll get a bunch of people in this house and have them all afraid of like this fake ghost thing. And then at the end, I'll say, oh, it was all fake and in your mind. And they'll realize fear is garbage, I guess, is the idea.
Well, that's the whole thing. He's trying to find a cure for fear.
which is like trying to get rid of survival of the fittest, in a way. It's like eliminate pain. It's like eliminating stuff that you should have. There's certain situations you should be afraid.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you eliminate like the whole like concept of fear from your brain, when you're in terrifying fuck situations, you're not going to realize it. You're not going to understand it.
Absolutely.
You know?
I actually have the cure for fear right here.
Glug. Yeah, that's the cure for fear. You know, one time, speaking of pain,
alcohol.
Though, I saw this Dateline NBC thing about this chick who had some fucking mental disease where, like, she couldn't feel pain. And it was fucked up because she couldn't feel things like when she bit her tongue and shit like that. Mm. So she was like, well, my mouth's always bleeding because I can't feel when I bite myself and stuff like that.
You need pain.
You know, I saw a Dateline thing, but it was To Catch a Predator. And if you want to say, man, those guys, they have fear in that situation.
That's terrified. Hey, just a little at-home guide to when an episode's about a movie we really didn't like. If we can't get into the plot summary, chances are the movie's fucking dud.
I'm trying to bring it back around because the major villain of this movie, the big menacing ghost that is also sort of the ghost house.
Yeah.
Hugh Crane.
Crazy pedophile.
Yeah, you know, I was fighting you on this, but I think at this point I'm going to give it up because what the whole thing is it turns out, you know, Liam Neeson's trying to find the cure for fear and whatnot. And it turns out they're in an actual haunted house. Whoops. And the house is haunted by hundreds of baby ghosts, as in ghosts of babies and children. And you know.
Like, he had a bunch of babies die on him, so he apparently enslaved a bunch of babies.
He really wanted babies, and then when his wife couldn't give him babies that, you know, lasted long enough,
stillborn. That's not lasting at all.
It's
really
not stillborn though, because they say like they just like some of them kind of like live for a little bit.
Yeah, I think one of them was up to year 12 or something.
That's something.
But you know, I'm sure like he broke them after a while. You know, you play with your toys long enough. So he needed more, and after, you know, his wife, his baby machine died, he had to get children from his sweatshop or something.
He owned like a mill, or there was like a mill in the town or some shit. Yeah. And so he was like, you know, hey, mill children, come up here in my castle.
This is like 1800s.
Do you think that there was like a crooked, like, truant officer?
who was rounding up the babies and bringing them in?
Shit.
Yeah,
like
you're skipping school. Off to the crane house with you.
like a Pied Piper for pedophilia.
That's got to be, you know what? That's got to be good paying work.
What if you're working for like the crooked baron? He pays well.
Yeah, I mean, because you're just throwing your morals out the window.
Whoever's at the head of sexual slavery is making some bank, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. So which reminds me of a better Liam Neeson movie, which is Taken. But anyway, back to The Haunting.
So Liam Neeson says he's doing this study in insomnia, and Lily Taylor, Owen Wilson, and Catherine Zeta-Jones go to spend an indeterminate amount of time at this haunted house.
I think it's just like a long, fun weekend. You know, because
Columbus Day weekend, nobody really celebrates it. Come out of this haunted house.
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone's just got that Monday free. So they're going to participate in what they think is the sleep study. They're all a bunch of like insomniacs and whatnot. And, you know, he says, like, we're going to go out to this house so we can be secluded, and we're going to do all these tests, and we're going to get to the root of why you can't go to sleep and whatever else, you know. And then we're introduced the main character, unfortunately, in this movie. And I've never meant something so much is when I say the word unfortunately is Lily Taylor in this movie. She's the main character. We meet her first. Another just cinematic sad sack.
Oh, she has made a career of sad sackery.
That's why when I see her in something, I'm like, great. 90 minutes of a fucking sob story.
Here come the waterworks.
Exactly. Or it's just her, like, trying to just straighten things out. Like, I'm kind of walking down the wrong path right now, but I'll get there. She's just the fucking worst.
Whenever you see her, it's just a sigh. It's
exactly. Great. And it's no different.
That works out.
Yeah.
Because the funny thing, we were watching this movie, and I was defending her in the beginning. I was, because I do like Lily Taylor and things, but guess what? She is not the main character of any movie, nor should she ever be.
No, do not hire her. Anyone out there who's making a movie right now, and you're like, that Lily Taylor might be good to carry my picture. You're wrong, and she's going to sink it.
I imagine, like, a casting director listening to this right now, and he's got, like, two names on a ledger, and it's, like, Lily Taylor and Nicole Kidman, and he's just like, ah, goodbye, Miss Taylor. Cross it off.
Thanks, we hate movies.
Unpleasant details. What have I been dealing with for the past 11 years? I've cooked, I've cleaned, I've mopped up her urine. You call that an unpleasant detail?
Hey,
now
your
we
sister
all know
didn't
what
write
you've
the
done.
Will.
We're trying to help. Do not help me.
So she's got all this fucking baggage. She's lived in a small apartment with her mother, who's an invalid. She's just died. Mm-hmm. And we meet her just after the funeral, where her shitty sister, played by Virginia Madsen, is like, well, we're just going to sell this apartment, me and my husband. And she's, you know, oh, I'm getting kicked out of my home.
And she's this, Virginia Madsen is this shitty kid that's just like, fucking with everything.
Oh, like, that's a shitty kid. He's got a face like the Mad Magazine guy.
Alfred E. Newman?
Yeah, he's got an Alfred E. Newman face. I've seen a couple kids with Alfred E. Newman face, and it's really fucking strange.
Yeah, you just want to smack them.
Yeah, because they're ugly. And they're usually up to no good also.
Which is why you have to kill them all in a
spooky
castle.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Castle.
You ever seen a fucking picture of Alfred E. Newman? It's an ugly cartoon character.
And he's just smug. He's just he's got that stinker vibe, which I can't handle.
Yeah, like, look at me. That's exactly what's going on.
I don't need a stinker. Well, the thing of it is, it's a real fucked up situation because you realize that Lily Taylor is, you know, caring for her invalid mother. Like, that's been her whole life. I mean, she goes through this sob story a bunch of times in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But the bare bones of it is she does this, and then she leaves her son-in-law as the executor of the estate.
Well, that
the
just
mother,
shows,
I mean.
Yeah, but that just shows, like, how much. Also, this mother was just, like, an evil shit to Lily Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's just taking a dump on her face in this movie. Like, her whole fucking family just takes advantage of her. She's like the family doormat, you know? So she sees this study as like an opportunity, like, I'm just going to reinvent myself. I'm going to take this sleep study, and who knows what's going to happen from there.
This is like her version of college. My 3 days of sleeping somewhere else.
A sleep study. That sounds sexy and exciting.
I'm going to come out a new person.
Speaking of sexy and exciting, can we talk about the fucking cock tease that this movie plays out with the whole, like, Catherine Zeta-Jones is, like, you know, she's like a late 90s, I'm a hot chick who's doing dudes and doing girls, and I'm going to tell everybody about it.
I believe they call them bisexuals, Andrew.
No, but this is like lipstick bisexual kind of a thing, you know?
Not
like,
just that regular bisexual.
Well, like, you know, it's this movie's totally doing, like, it's the fucking right on the heels of the whole Ally McBeal thing where, like, every female cast member on that show was making out at one point for, like, ratings.
That was how they fucking kept the fucking lights on in that show.
Absolutely.
Every 9 episodes, somebody might have kissed somebody else.
Well, dude, you're not tuning in for fucking Peter McNichol. I mean, come on.
I should have watched Ally McBeal.
But no,
I did watch Ally McBeal for that reason.
I know, I could tell.
But so this flick, it's that's like the first thing out of her mouth. She's like, hi, people call me Theo or whatever, and then she's like,
well, my boyfriend thinks so, my girlfriend doesn't. We could all live together, but they hate each other.
And my boyfriend does this, but my girlfriend does this. Like, right out the gate, it's like, I'm a hot chick who fucks girls. Get ready, movie.
The book, I read the book, just picked it up. It was an engaging read, But I felt really guilty about it because I felt like a scumbag, because that's kind of how it is in the book as well. This character, like, you know, the Lily Taylor character is this kind of mousy person that's never been outside. And like, there's the worldly woman that's kind of sort of flirting with her. And like, I was looking for a good spook story. And I just, this happened and I'm like, where are we going with this book?
Well, dude,
what
do you think kept me going the first time I saw this movie? I mean, come on.
You're looking for the centerfold in that book?
Yeah. The Shirley Jackson.
Pulls out.
The Shirley Jackson literary classic, The Pull Out. Yeah, no, it doesn't have. I mean, it was like 1950 something. There's no. She'd be burned at the stake if she put that in her book.
But that's with true. This flick,
you can do it.
You can do it, and they don't. And. It's all Lily Taylor's fault that it doesn't happen, because mm-hmm. Catherine Zeta-Jones' character gives her some chances. There's a lot of like kissing her on the forehead, tucking her into bed,
rubbing her shoulder, that kind of.
Yeah.
Exposing herself, kind of, not like any. No, but like yeah, nudity, she does. But she, like lingerie. Just
yeah, she takes her clothes
around.
Off in front of her.
But that's
yeah.
the interesting thing about when
she
Lily
presents herself.
When Lily Taylor first meets her, like, it's just like she's like turning away while she's taking her coat off, and there's this like super close up on Catherine Zeta-Jones like breasts, and Lily Taylor's like, hey now, like, there's definitely a hey now moment. But
well,
like,
yeah, because she turns around, she's like, oh, don't look right at it.
Yeah,
don't look right at Medusa's breasts.
Well, I think it's just probably, you know, living in that fucking piss soaked, you know, invalid's house is gonna just fuck you up sexually for the rest of your life.
No, yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to say she's never known the touch of fucking anything.
Yeah, no, she's like a 50-year-old virgin in this movie. Right? Mm-hmm.
So, is she 50 in this movie?
I don't know. Her face looks aged. You know, she's weathered from all those years.
It's just from a big shit ass life.
You that's, sigh enough, your face looks like Lily Taylor.
That's it's one of those situations where like the grocery guy is dropping the groceries off, and she's like talking his ear off, and he's like, I have like 4 more deliveries to make. And she's like, no, no, just stay a while. Do you want a cup of coffee? I got beer here. Anything,
goodbye.
Right?
Hey, Mom, the Swanson's guy talked to me for 4 minutes this afternoon.
Oh, you whore. You probably threw yourself at him, you whore. Change my bedpan.
So Catherine Zeta-Jones and Lily Taylor, after a little quasi-flirting there, they run around in the big mansion that they're staying in for this sleep study, thinking it's like, oh, this is so much fun. This is amazing. And then they bump into the 1990s, which is Owen Wilson
in those
sweaters.
It's like a 1990s like peacock, like throwing its feathers all over the place. There's so much fucking neon and bowl cut hairdos going on.
He looks like a fucking Tony Hawk creator character.
Exactly.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's like it's early on enough in his career too, where like he hasn't really found. What we know Owen Wilson to be like, he's a fairly good actor. I see Owen Wilson in something and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I can get behind this. This isn't what this is. That's like pre what we know Owen Wilson as.
Aside from Drillbit Taylor, there's not a movie in his resume that I think is like truly terrible.
Well, I don't know. Those movies he did with Jackie Chan are pretty awful.
Oh, yeah. The Shanghai whatever.
Zune and Shanghai Nights.
And was it I Spy?
Do you think
I didn't see that either.
That was Eddie Murphy. Yeah. Do you think they ran out of the Shanghai things because they couldn't think of any more titles? They're like, well, we're out.
Well, yeah. I mean, the second one's like a pun.
Yeah.
Because it's like night with a K.
Yeah.
You know, because that's kind of cute.
Shanghai Dawn?
There might have been a Shanghai Dawn script kicking around.
You're bringing your insomniacs to this house under false pretenses.
Because the experiment needs a credible cover story. Calling it an insomnia study allows me to create a highly suggestive environment to investigate the dynamics of fear. You don't tell the rats they're actually in a maze, Malcolm.
So Liam Neeson... Is it pretty reprehensible what he does in this movie? Like, as far as...
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling this stuff happens a lot in the world of academia. You know, the old...
Haunted houses?
No, the bait and switch.
Let's put them all in a spook house and see what happens. Science.
Well, I mean, technically now, like, this sort of thing is more like a fucking reality show social experiment.
Oh, absolutely.
I think the Sci-Fi Channel used to have a show like this where it's like, let's see how long the people can stay in the spooky house. And, like, if you stay all night, you win a Surprise.
That was MTV's
something.
Fear, I believe it was.
Oh, was that MTV's Fear where they did that?
Yeah, that came out of the Blair Witch Project. You know, people like huffing and puffing into cameras. They're like, hey, that's $1 million idea.
Right.
So they made a TV show about it.
Also MTV Skins? Huffing and puffing into a camera. Sorry, just bring it back around to the villain. Sorry.
Yeah, the pedophilia. That show got canceled for pedophilia, didn't it?
More or less. I mean, I think it's one of those things where MTV could feel the heat. They just didn't want to deal with it. Yeah.
Like the UK, they're a little more... We'll step out of this arena. We're sorry, everybody.
But the Liam Neeson thing, you do bring to mind a question I had that I wanted to put out to the group. And that is, Lily Taylor sees this advertisement for this, you know, sleep study. We'll pay you $500 for a weekend of your time.
What a loser.
That's like how I'm like framing this question. Like, would you guys ever sign up for one of those things?
I mean, if it was like $900 for a sleep study, I'd probably do it. I have sleep problems.
If I was already collecting unemployment, I would definitely do that.
What about they always have those ones where it's like testing these new products for side effects, like those kind of a things, like not necessarily pills, but like, yeah, maybe pills or like new food products. Like, try this new energy bar. Yeah.
Hey, mom, they're doing an energy bar tasting. Can I go? No, you whore. You're going to fill yourself up with the energy products. I know what that is. I know what goes on at Madison Avenue. Make sure you put all your makeup on before you go to your little taste test, you fucking whore.
I know energy bar is just a nickname for your boyfriend.
I wish that this woman was a character in this movie. It would have been so much better.
You mean the character we completely invented?
Yes, exactly. Telling you, we could have written this movie a little better.
It would have been better, yeah.
That would be if the house was haunted by this ghost.
Just a real crotchety old broad.
The fucking mom from Throw Mama from the Train. There's a movie. That lady's fucking ghost haunts a house.
That would be fantastic.
Speaking of starting out with a spook, though, that's something that we were talking about is like, this movie just starts right in with like Lily Taylor's shit life. And that's what you're dealing with is like this movie opens. Now, here I am. It's 1999. I want to go see a movie on a Friday night. Oh, The Haunting. I've seen previews for this. It looks mildly scary.
Yeah.
You know,
it's got a scary title, at least.
Exactly. In the preview, I saw something about a ghost. So let's go check it out.
What's sad is that's what I did.
Yeah, you did see the theater. Yeah. Didn't you?
Right. So firsthand account, right? You're going into this movie and you're like, all right, here we go. Scare me. And it starts out with this chick's shitty life. Like, this movie needed a prologue of some kind. Maybe, like, a flashback of Hugh Crane killing these kids or something.
It needed something. I actually remember seeing this in the theater back in 99 and actually going, being, like, really bored with it. It's a
boring-ass movie.
Yeah.
Like a 14-year-old kid being like, wow, this is fucking boring.
Yeah, but, you know, I stuck through it.
I mean, because any kind of good horror movie, like, and you know, I get it. Like, it's not the fault of the movie that they're trying to, like, develop the main character and, you know, flush her out, give her a little bit of backstory. As terrible as that is and as poorly written
but
as it is.
But you shouldn't be doing it for an hour.
Well, yeah, exactly. You shouldn't open your fucking movie with The Haunting and then it's Lily Taylor, like, polishing a bedpan.
Yeah.
The one thing I do before we close the door on the opening scene, there's something really weird about it that I was just thinking about because, as you said, it's 1999.
Like, yeah.
Shirley Jackson's book was written in the 50s, and it did have this character that, you know, took care of her mother, and her sister was kind of overbearing, and, like, she really didn't have any options because she wasn't married because that's what it was in the 50s.
Right.
And this movie, like, it's the same situation, but it's in contemporary times. There's, like, cell phones and stuff, and she's just, like, her sister's, like, well, you know, you can either, you know, sell the house to us or you can come live with us and be our maid, you know?
Yeah, what the fuck is with that indentured servitude?
It's like be on the street or be my servant.
There are temp agencies out there.
Dude, Starbucks, you know? Like, all this stuff was totally around. Like, fucking Best Buy was around. Like, go get a job at Best Buy, Lily Taylor.
go to the grocery store.
Anything. You don't have to be your sister's slave.
Go to work at a nursing home, and you'll get all fucking all sorts of old people pissing on you.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you're into.
She's got great experience for that. I think that's the only thing she had on her resume that would really fit.
Piss Pot?
That's what she did. She was Piss Pot from 1978 to 1999.
I'll believe it.
But yeah, that always struck me as a little weird, like one of those holdovers from the book that just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there's no reason for that to happen. You're absolutely right. So we get to this haunted house, by the way, and the first person we're introduced to is the character played by Hollywood pseudo legend Bruce Dern.
Yeah, he is a pseudo legend.
I want to amend that. Not pseudo legend, but I would like to say Hollywood, oh, he's here too, Bruce Dern.
Yeah.
He was like three career moves away from being Dennis Hopper, and it just never happened.
Right. I mean, because he's kind of, he was involved with that crowd of like the Peter Fondas and the Dennis Hoppers
kind
and all that stuff.
Culture movement, that like whole thing.
He was even in a late Hitchcock movie.
He was in Hitchcock's last movie, Family Plot,
yeah,
which is a fairly terrible movie. But, you know, I mean, he was a big star. But, yeah, he was involved in, like, the counterculture movement and, all, you know, all these things. And what the fuck happened?
It just never happened for him. I don't know what it was. I mean, maybe it's just because he looks like a crypt keeper.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. I think the balding and the emaciated face sort of took away from his leading man status.
Yeah, when you're getting outfoxed by fucking Dennis Hopper in the good looks department, you're in trouble.
Well, I always found Dennis Hopper to be quite handsome.
But, I mean, he always just kind of took on these roles of like, here he is, the old crank, the old kook,
yeah,
you know, the old crazy homeless man.
Yeah, he's always just this weird little guy.
Yeah, or caretaker for a haunted mansion, like in this movie, you know. And the thing about like haunted mansion caretakers is it's always an old ass married couple, because Peter or Bruce Dern is married to like this old bat who's like given Lily Taylor like the tour of the house and whatnot. And I think. The qualification for old married couple haunted house caretakers is that one is just like the nice guy, which is Bruce Dern, but then the other half of that couple has to be just like eerily terrifying.
Oh yeah, she's all like, you're out in the middle of nowhere and no one's gonna hear you scream. And there'll never be an opportunity for you to scream because nothing's going to happen for an hour and a half. The odd portent at the beginning of the film.
Yeah, it's like you forget that it's a haunted mansion, and then the hauntings start happening. So it kind of puts you in there.
Yeah.
Like you're just, after a while, I was just like, oh, what's this movie about this house?
It's just a house.
And then I was like, oh, there's ghosts.
Wait, there's ghosts in this house.
I thought this movie was about a woman finding herself.
Because ghosts come, like you go to sleep at night, you go to sleep, and then you wake up and it's like, oh my God, there's ghosts in my room.
Yeah.
So this movie's like, let's put the audience to sleep a little bit, put them to sleep, and then they'll wake up and there'll be ghosts.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, my 20s, while being a lot of fun a lot of the time, were pretty rough. I wasn't exactly rolling in dough. I lived at home until I was about 25, and for most of it, I didn't have this show or you lovely people in my life. I just kind of drifted around without direction and didn't know where to voice that. Then I started to get my crap together one piece at a time, and the last piece, which didn't come until my early 30s, was therapy. And man, I wish it came along sooner. Ever since I started sitting down with a licensed therapist, I've had a place to voice my insecurities and try to fashion plans to help me achieve my goals. So that's why I'm thrilled we're sponsored by BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be flexible, convenient, and suited to meet your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and the good thing is you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/WHM today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WHM.
This episode is brought to you in part by Rocket Money, and they have this question for you. They handed to me just now. Mr. Rocket just handed me this. Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans think they pay around $80 a month on subscription services, but the actual total is closer to $200. If you don't know exactly how much you're spending every month, you need Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills all in one place. And with Rocket Money, you could lower those bills without resorting to having bean dinners every day of the week. You know, you have those bean dinners to try to save some few bucks, but if you were monitoring your spending with Rocket Money, you didn't necessarily need to eat every bean dinner. So find out what all the fuss is about. You know, over 80% of people have subscriptions they forgot about, like the Stars app. Don't get me started. You don't have to go through all the back end of the website anymore. You don't have to call customer service. Rocket Money helps you manage all your finances in one place as well and categorizes everything. It's easy to keep track of a whole budget. Even I can do it and I got rocks in my head. So find out what 3 million people have already done. They've taken the Rocket, folks. Stop throwing the money away. Cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/WHM. That is rocketmoney.com/WHM. Once more, rocketmoney.com/WHM, which stands for We Hate Movies.
Let's talk about these ghosts because it leads to the biggest problem of this movie is that they spent $80 million making this movie.
Such a large number.
And a lot of this money went to fucking, like, late 90s, like, the early ages of what we know CGI to be today. And that's what this is. It's just filled with shitty computer animation. All the ghosts are computer. All the little creepy ghost baby faces, you know, that... They press themselves up against curtains.
There's so much fucking forms within curtains in this movie. It's out of the fuck control.
And it just all looks fucking awful. And the thing about it is, like, it's impossible for your audience to get scared at something when its appearance is laughable.
Yeah. You know what I think one part problem with that is it doesn't... The way they do the faces and stuff in the curtains... It's like full formed. It's like, there's my nose, there's my eyes, there's my mouth. And it's like, I put my face into a curtain. It's going to be sort of like a vague shape of a head.
Which is scarier.
Yes, exactly. It's like, you know, Lucas showing the monster in the cave in Empire.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, you're looking at something and like a face that's not a face is so much more scary. That's why, like, Jesus Christ, the fucking, like, painted faces on the potato sacks in The Strangers is horrifying because you know they're supposed to be faces, but they're crude.
For a second, I thought you were trying to say that Jesus Christ didn't have a face, and that's why he was terrifying.
Jesus is terrifying.
For all kinda different reasons.
Though. No, but and also, that's one half of why that CGI is terrible. The other half of it is that's fucking impossible. Like, you know what I mean? Like you said, if you put your face up to a sheet, it's just going to look like a vague shape. You're not going to see fucking nostrils unless the fucking thing is made out of saran wrap, which it clearly is not.
But, like, so then what is this inferring? That, like, the ghost is possessing the curtain instead of just pressing itself against it?
Wow.
Because they do it to, like, a pillowcase at one point. Like, here's the thing. Is this movie...
possessed pillowcase.
Oh!
try to sleep well on me.
This movie can't decide what kind of, like, haunting happenings they want, because it's the way I see it as far as haunted house movies are concerned. You get it one of two ways. Okay, the first way is, oh, it's a haunted house, there's ghosts in it. The second way, which this movie tries to fucking have its cake and eat it too, is the house itself is like a physical, like, monster entity. There's so much shit of like window panes and beams and whatnot, like turning to look like a face.
Right, yeah.
You know what this happens in? Like when the house fucking contorts itself and shit, is like the ghost houses in like the Mario video games, like Super Mario World, and you gotta go in the fucking haunted house.
Yeah, like a big smile with doors as teeth kind of a thing.
Yeah, like a beam turns a certain way to look like a jagged tooth. Oh,
I would have loved little skeletal turtles walking around in this movie. It would have been so much better.
Well, the thing about the ghosts is if you look at them, they stop.
Yeah, right.
There's also the, and this is what's legitimately creepy about this movie, but they fuck it up so it's not terrifying.
The fact that they spent $80 million on it.
Yeah, that's a terrifying thought that, you know, that money just fucking was flushed down the toilet. But I'm talking about Lily Taylor's dead baby bedroom that she sleeps in.
Oh my God, the dead baby bedroom.
Okay. They're all assigned to like their own private bedroom and whatnot. And Lily Taylor's room is just adorned with all these like creepy cherub faces. Oh, and she's walking around. She walks in and the creepy old maid's like giving her the tour. And she's like, "This is your room. It's probably the last room you'll ever sleep in." And she's like,
"These are beautiful.
I know. I've seen them. It's a lot to dust.
I've never seen this kind of beauty. You must love working here.
But look how beautiful it is. Oh, you're so lucky to live here. Look at all the beautiful babies. You fucking lunatic."
She will not fucking shut up about how beautiful everything is.
No, she thinks that house is gorgeous.
I don't get it. Like, I don't like faces in the room in which I'm trying to sleep.
Not at all. No,
zero.
No.
I don't like dolls. I don't want faces. I don't want ornate fucking cherub babies looking at me while I'm trying to sleep. Inches above my head.
Yeah, there's like 50 in adorning the headboard. All these big fat dead baby faces.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Could you have sex on that bed?
Not at all.
Not like, because you have all these dead babies looking at you, right?
No, exactly.
Maybe if you're in a pinch.
If you're in a pinch?
Honestly, man, I'm taking it to the bathroom. Like, if it's one of those things, and like I'm trying to like, you know, figure out, like get things going and whatnot, and then I just look, and there's a thing looking at me like, "Hey, hey, I'm a dead baby."
They do establish there's like 80 rooms in this goddamn house.
We only see
about four, but...
Right. They make a point to say that another weird thing about this Hugh Crane character is that he just had this endless amount of money. And, you know, whether or not the legend is true that he was luring mill kids into his house and whatever, he kept building onto this house. Like, he owned all this property, and they're just building all these rooms onto this house. So they establish early on that there's, like, hundreds of rooms.
And the exterior shots make this place look massive.
Oh, yeah. Like, insanely massive.
Buckingham Palace times two.
Totally.
And wait, what's great, too, is they talk about, like, the town lore, like how he... "That old man Kane hasn't been seen in years, but pray tell, you could hear some children's voices coming from that castle here and there."
Infinite amount of rooms in here. Couches, beds, everything you want.
Houses, and children.
But she continues to sleep in the cherub baby room that is the most haunted room of all the house.
That's the thing. Is
Owen,
like,
Wilson gets great sleep in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Right. He's fine. Catherine Zeta-Jones hears like a couple knocks here and there.
Because she's the neighbor.
Right, yeah. But that's it. And this room is like contorting itself and fucking the bed, like... There's all these like posts on the bed that come down and like pin her to it, and that's getting a little weird. And she's just like, "Well, I just got to keep sleeping in here because it's so beautiful. All the babies.
I haven't been woken up once by a demanding old woman. This is the best place I've ever seen."
And totally, she says, they're talking about, like, at the one point, they're all having, like, a let's get to know each other mixer at the start of this.
Oh, can we? Yeah.
And they're talking about, like, yeah, you know, "Oh, well," Owen Wilson's like, "I'm just, you know, my mind's always racing, so I can never get to sleep." And Catherine Zeta-Jones is like, "Oh, and I'm just such a wild socialite that my life just keeps going, and I can't seem to get a night's sleep." And then Lily Taylor's like,
"Well, it seems that you all have trouble sleeping because your lives are exciting and it's complicated and you think about it when you go to sleep. But I don't know, nothing's ever really happened to me, so I don't have a reason to sleep badly.
My life is just so empty and sad, and nothing happens, and I guess I just don't know why I can't sleep. You all just have such exciting lives, and I have nothing."
And she goes like, and she's like, "And when you go to sleep, you try to think about your exciting lives, and that's what's your problem. I don't have that problem."
I would just love that fucking ghost. Like, "Oh, poor you. I'm sorry. I'm so terrible. I can't clean myself, Eleanor. I'm sorry you can't be gallivanting out with the grocery boy. But whatever, I only birthed you."
Yeah, it's one of those scenarios. But so she makes it a point to say, you know, I just don't know what it's like to try to get a good night's sleep and just wake up to a cane banging on a wall because my mother would just incessantly bang her cane on the wall when she needed something.
You better not be sleeping.
You better not be masturbating in there.
So, of course, she's the first night she's going to wake up and hear this fucking cane banging and think her mother's around, too.
Can we just she take probably a was. She probably had. She's probably old enough to have been with this guy, right, Craig?
Oh, we'll get to that fucking shitty twist in a moment.
It's a shit twist, but yeah, let's keep going.
The mixer you were talking about, the beginning mixer,
right.
with there are some characters there that...
Oh, yeah!
Director Todd Field, who had a bit of a career as an actor, I think he still acts a little bit...
Here and there, yeah.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, he directed Little Children.
Little Children and In the Bedroom, which won a lot of Academy Awards. I think Little Children's even... I think he might have been nominated for an Academy Award. Whatever. These are critically acclaimed films, whether you like them or not.
Just melodramas.
He was also in Twister, which Jan de Bont directed. So he's in this for like...
He's part of the Jan de Bont stable.
Yeah, stable of actors of Jan de Bont.
Exclusive club.
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
But it doesn't...
No. He left for Speed 2.
Yeah, he fucking saw that sticker coming. He wasn't staying on that boat. They're in the beginning of this movie, but they just kind of, and like the special attention is paid to Todd Field's character, like in that he has to have a name.
Yeah, he has to be Todd. He's Todd.
Yeah,
and they make it a point to really drive it home that it's Todd, because every time Liam Neeson opens his mouth, Todd, can you do this for me? Todd, I need you to come over here. Todd, is it cold outside?
Todd, get away from her. Her eye is bleeding.
Todd, pass the salt, please, Todd.
And they're both like employees of like they're lab assistants of Liam Neeson. It's Todd and Mary.
Yeah.
Is the other assistant. And they're having the opening night mixer and whatnot, and you see one of the little baby ghosts tightens.
The beautiful baby ghost.
The beautiful baby ghost tightens a string on a piano.
What a stinker that little baby ghost is.
Totally. And then so Mary comes over and like, you know, whenever like a piano is opened up, you know, everyone's got to like drum their fingers along the strings. And she does this and it just breaks off in her eyeball.
Yeah.
And really just gets her good. Like, right out of the bat, I'm thinking, like, all right, like, here's some mischievous ghouls.
Yeah, exactly. They're fucking up to no good. We're going to see, we see some blood right away. Cause is this R or is this PG-13? I think this is PG-13, actually.
It's got to be PG-13. I can't see
nothing fucking happens.
Well...
Yeah, no, it's in PG. Oh, this is a bullshit. To the IMDb, MPAA rating, rated PG-13 for intense horror sequences. Let's fucking scale back the I word a little bit, MPAA.
Let's not drop the I bomb just yet.
No, absolutely not. So, yeah, so Mary gets this, like, piano wire in the fucking eyeball. And so Liam Neeson immediately springs to action and he's like, Todd, you have to take her to the doctor. Let's go, Todd. You have to get her in the car and you take her to the doctor. You're going to go now. Do you understand me? You're going to go now.
What's kind of funny about that sequence, I believe, like, Todd sort of gets there first initially, and Liam Neeson, like, jumps in and is like, Todd, you're crowding her. Like, in a way.
Todd, like, I love you, but not now.
Todd is just there to, like, make Liam Neeson look better.
I wish Todd was in this movie. I wish Todd came back. Like, leave Mary at the hospital. Right. Todd needs to come back and take care of Todd business.
But that's the thing that's so stupid about this, is it's a gigantic movie flub, is Liam Neeson clearly says to Todd, Todd, you're going to take her to the hospital, and when you hear something about her condition, you're going to call me on my cellular telephone. And then they drive off, and they're going to go to the doctor and whatever, but you just never hear or see from them ever again. They're never mentioned in the movie. It's just gone. To quote Doc Brown, erased from existence. Like, it's fucking nothing. Like, how do you just drop two characters like that?
I feel like you drive to the border of a movie and, like, you pass that line. Yeah. You're gone.
But I would understand that.
Do you exit like, the movie The 13th Floor? You just go out into nothing?
And I would totally understand that if this was a movie that took place over one night.
Yeah.
You know, there's other stuff going on. That's right. And then once the sun comes up, wow, that was crazy. But this movie lasts for like 3 days. There's a couple of breakfast scenes. People are just drinking coffee.
It feels like it lasts for 3 days, too.
So they should come back. Like, how? What is she in the fucking like intensive care unit?
Probably.
You got kind of the eye. Todd
with has his own movie going on with this gripping medical drama.
Todd's gotta find an eye donor somewhere.
We gotta save Mary's vision.
They get Jerry Orbach's eyes and plop them in there.
Oh my god.
But I mean,
Jerry Orbach, by the way, he's an eye donor. And if you've ridden the New York City subway, you've seen a lot of ads that Jerry Orbach was an eye donor. That's trying to clear that up for everyone.
Yeah, that's not a known thing, Steve.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but that's such a weird ad to me. It's like, because I can't look at Law and Order, which I watch a lot, not knowing that Jerry Orbach's eyes have been popped into somebody's fucking skull at some point.
His eyes might be in the same subway car as you.
It's just one eyeball per person, though.
Oh, wow.
That's how that works?
Because with that, like eye donor stuff like that, they're not going to get carried away. They got to spread the wealth as much as possible.
Right, right.
You get one eye.
Yeah, you're not going to restore a blind person to full vision.
Best. Yeah, exactly. So there's two people walking around with Jerry Orbach's eyes.
Did they ever met?
No. But can you imagine, if you, join them together or something like that? You kind of made, Lenny Briscoe's face.
Same space can't occupy the same... You're right. I'm trying to do time cop rules, but that doesn't make sense.
Same eyeball can't touch another eyeball?
Yeah, although I think it can.
That eyeball, by the way... I watched Dirty Dancing not too long ago, and there's that fucking weird abortion scene that Jerry Orbach's has to clean up after.
Yeah, he's got to take care of that mess. He's Mike the cleaner of Dirty Dancing, absolutely. To touch back on the CGI for a second, this movie also has one more CGI problem that was prevalent in tons of stuff when CGI was really coming out, and they never got a handle on this. So much so that I think for the most part, movies and TV just don't do it anymore, and that's fake breath.
Yeah.
When they're trying to pretend like it's cold in a room, and that's when a lot of this haunting is going on. It's like, oh, the room's getting cold. My beautiful room is cold. Babies are cold. Get little parkas for the babies. And they're just got the worst fucking white foam is just shooting out of their mouths. It's so horrible.
And Lily Taylor's running around with doilies, putting them on cherubs to keep them all nice and warm.
Tuck them in. I don't understand her fucking fascination. That is a woman that just knows she's never gonna have kids. So even ghost babies is her best option.
Right.
Yep. That's a sad scenario.
That's the crusade she takes upon herself.
Well, that's the thing. If I can't have kids of my own, the next best thing is obviously caring for an army of baby ghosts.
Can I just quickly interject with my favorite scene of the movie? Because it doesn't really involve these really huge characters like Lily Taylor and Catherine Zeta-Jones. Is the scene where, I was going to say Luke Wilson. It's Owen Wilson, but he's playing a character named Luke.
Right. Yeah.
That's the dumbest piece of IMDb trivia on this movie. Is Owen Wilson plays a character named Luke. His brother's Luke Wilson.
Enjoy
your day.
That's all that is. It's not trivia if it's something someone can just put together easily.
Do you remember
that?
The trivia before the movie sometimes? That seems like one of those.
Yeah, it does.
A Regal Theater in the year 2000 and
popcorn
facts. Yes. Yeah. Owen Wilson played the name of his brother in what movie?
The Haunting.
You're welcome. Now here's the movie. This is so fucking stupid.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, but please.
Yes, but okay, so Owen Wilson is walking down the hallway playing with he's just playing catch with himself. And unbeknownst to him, Liam Neeson is walking down the other hallway and they collide. And then it's like a 5-minute streak. It's like, oh, bumped into me.
God. Scared the...
I'm sorry.
Oh, you gotta be careful.
Are you all right? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. You just don't jump out.
Are you all right?
Yeah, no.
Oh. What's with the glove?
What?
What's with the glove?
No, I couldn't sleep. I was just insomnia. Yeah. What's with... Yeah, you gotta be careful, because I...
I wasn't. I was just...
No, I know. I'm sorry. I just... Oh.
Interesting group, huh?
Owen Wilson is so jostled by this. And here's why it's ridiculous, is because neither of them are running at a full clip or anything like that. It's very much just the bump into, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But it's Owen Wilson oh, God, you can't. Oh, gee, you can't. Oh, wow.
Don't do a bump out on somebody like that. That's not, that's really bad to do. Geez, you just can't. Oh, like that. It's really bad to do that.
And
oh,
Liam Neeson's trying to cut him off. I'm sorry. I'll go the other way. I'm sorry.
I got psychology to work on.
Well, let's.
that kind of is a to a bigger point of like the way how awkward that scene is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the last two people that should be in a horror movie are Owen Wilson and Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
It's like, very true.
Because neither of them
One is too like kind of funny and gee whiz, and the other one's too like just like focused for you to buy that he's going to get hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I can't picture Liam Neeson getting hurt. Ever.
Or being afraid. No. Punch you in the face, ghost.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he'd beat the shit out of a ghost. He'd find a way to beat the shit out
the
of a
fuck
ghost.
Out of
no, yeah, you're totally right. I think Owen Wilson more so, if this movie was like kind of like creepier in any capacity. And it brings to mind around the same time that this movie came out, they did that House on Haunted Hill remake.
I think they might have came out the same year.
It's quite possible. And you know, to House on Haunted Hill's credit, and it's a bad movie, don't get me wrong.
I didn't see it.
It's not good. I mean, I like the original, like the Vincent Price flicks, actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is just not that. I mean, like, to exemplify my point, Chris Kattan's in it.
Yeah, that's all you need to know.
But, you know, it's at least got a creepier atmosphere to it. Everything about this movie is just so fucking dull and plain and baby faces.
Not a scare in it until like an hour and 20 minutes in, and we are not joking.
No, and it's very bright, to be quite honest. Like the it's very bright. You can see everything.
Oh, yeah, it's
ever.
Not spooky at all.
Because it's really, I think it's more, this movie specifically was more interested in showing off what CGI can do or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, no, like, exactly.
And it's so dull that way because, like, I mean, obviously what horror is, I have to tell you, audience, is what you can't see. What you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
What's going to happen around the corner. There's never that moment of like, you're looking at something you don't know what's going to happen.
In this movie's defense, I had no idea that Owen Wilson was going to bump into Liam Neeson. That is the unseen.
This just in from the internet ticker. House on Haunted Hill did come out the same year. It was 1999.
Is there zombie Chris Kattan in that movie, or am I making that up?
I don't remember him being a zombie. I think he does get killed, though. Yeah. There may be some, like, ghost of him or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I don't remember him in like rising from the grave or anything like that.
Zombie Chris Kattan, see Corky Romano.
These carvings are really creepy. All these fat little cherubs and angels with furry animals. It's really bizarre, I think.
I think they're the children Hugh Crane built the house for.
I don't buy that for a second, that Hugh Crane was this lovable old tycoon with a soft spot for kids. The guy was obviously running a sweatshop, had children working 16 hours a day, and he builds all this crap as propaganda. It's like those Teletubbies. Those things freak me out also.
So we're going on all these tangents and whatnot because, honestly, a lot of these scenes just sort of repeat themselves. A bunch of dull conversation in the kitchen or the sitting room,
yeah.
Followed by a night of mild shock and terror from only Lily Taylor. Like, no one else in this movie gets haunted at all.
No.
And that's
no
like kind of the... Oh, sorry.
No, yeah, no, I'm sorry.
But, I mean, that's the whole kind of thing is like, you know, they do eventually figure out that Liam Neeson's lying to them. Yeah. So the whole thing's like, oh, well, Lily Taylor's just this crazy person that you brought into the study because she's saying all these insane things.
No one else
and nobody believes her kind of a thing. They're, like, if you want a haunted house movie, make everyone get haunted. Like, everyone eventually starts seeing shit in, like, the, you know, the tail end of the third act and whatever.
You know what? Honestly, show me ghosts that aren't part of a curtain, pillowcase, or some type of metal statue.
Yeah,
no, exactly. And I pointed it out when the scene where they're walking around the house, her being Lily Taylor and Catherine Zeta-Jones' characters are walking around the house like, oh, this is so fun. It's a crazy fun house, blah, blah, blah. And they walk through a door that's like both parts of the door are a mirror. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the camera holds the shot on the door like they walk through it and the doors close. And the doors just keep closing and closing and closing. And then they close. And then there's nothing in the mirror. Like, that's the, like, if you're making a haunted house movie, those doors slowly close. And when they close, you see the reflection of a ghost in a mirror. Like, that's how this stuff works. You don't just have a fucking shot of a mirror and not do something with it.
Yeah.
God damn. So, I mean, we might as well get into the heart of the matter. They see, you know, they find a bunch of blood written on the wall.
Welcome.
For like, welcome home. Yeah. Welcome home, Eleanor. Welcome back, Cotter. And then.
Oh, man. If there were a couple of sweat hogs in this movie, that would be phenomenal.
We were just trying to scare you, Mr. Cotter. We didn't mean no harm. We knew you were trying to leave with your girlfriend, so we just tried to scare you a little bit.
Jeez, guys, this was just a joke. I mean, let's not get nuts or nothing.
This movie dissolves into a 70s sitcom. I'd be totally fine with it. So they find the blood, and then like the hauntings start to escalate. Liam Neeson gets tugged by like a giant statue.
Yeah, like, he gets pulled underwater by a statue, a fountain statue.
And then he gets pulled underwater. It's like this, you know, like, oh, is Liam Neeson going to bite the big one here?
Yeah.
But it, like, lets him go, and Liam Neeson like literally gets up, like doesn't fucking say anything. He's just like, eh, whatever.
It cuts to him washing his hands, like, oh, yeah, that was close.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the end of it.
That was a scary one.
And I don't understand
luckily,
why this movie.
I'm Liam Neeson.
Too manly to be afraid. I was going to break that statue's fingers.
I don't understand why this movie, like, the script waited until the third act to, like, start doing stuff to anybody. Like,
yeah,
you have, you know, I get it. It's like a small cast. Like, it's mainly four people in this, yeah, house, you know, for 90% of the movie or whatever. But, like, either then, you know, populate it with some more characters here and there. So, like, they can be kind of killed. Like, why are all these people disappearing?
Yeah.
You know? Like, that happens in these movies.
Yeah, I mean, well, but the thing of it is, because you have two options. And, I mean, like, I think the book, there's, like, atmosphere. So it's a very small cast in the book. And, like, there's really no body count until the end. The main character, like, actually kills herself, which is pretty awesome. And, like, you don't know if it's a real ghost or if it's in her head, which this movie totally spells out to you that it's super real ghosts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like,
And in the 1963 version of this movie, doesn't, like, the main character, like, jump in front of a car at the end or something like,
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's another type of suicide?
Yeah, well, in the book, I think it's probably the same thing. She drives into a tree, like, because she doesn't want to leave the house because she's so fucking nuts at that point.
Right.
But, like,
better ending.
Exactly. That's like atmospheric. So, like, yeah, there's no body count. But, oh, wow, it's so creepy and tense. But there's no tension, no nothing. So you might as well have a body count at that point.
No, exactly. And, you know, I'm not saying, like, I need a body count because I know it's perfectly fine. I fucking love atmospheric horror. Like, I absolutely love that. I love that more than I love slasher movies.
Oh, sure.
And stuff like that. And, I mean, I guess I'll just bring this up now because I wanted to give two options of actual good haunted house movies, and both of them happen to be good atmospheric horror movies too. The Changeling with George C. Scott from 1980 and House of the Devil from 2008, 2009, yes, something like that.
How about The Shining? That's another house.
Yeah, or The Shining. Yeah, you know, everyone's seen that.
Well, obviously.
Well, yeah, obviously. But I mean, those all three of those movies are successful, not because there's a high body count, but because the filmmakers are incredibly successful at just creating this sense of dread in these houses.
I want to just add one more onto that, which is Insidious. It just came out last year or maybe earlier this year.
Oh, yeah, it was this year. I still got to see it.
James Wan, who did Saw, and it's like a totally different mode. And it's, I mean, there are some echoes of Jigsaw in parts, and you're like, oh, no. But more often, no, I just scared everybody off the movie. No, but more often than not, it's one of the scariest movies I've seen in theaters, and there's no real body count. It's just like really atmospheric haunted house dread, and it's really cool.
Totally. I mean, I was blown away when I saw House of the Devil. It's also partially a gimmick movie because the whole thing is shot and designed to look like it was actually made in the 1980s.
Yeah.
So much so that, like, when the flick came out for home release, they released it as like a DVD VHS combo where it had like the old clamshell case and everything. But it's that same thing of like, there's nothing happening, but everything is happening.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a great movie, but there's no ghosts.
Zero ghosts.
it's just Satanist a scary movie. Haunted house.
No, no, exactly.
Kind of thing,
exactly.
You know? But yeah, I mean, I think this actually brings to mind the whole idea of like showing versus not showing. And right. I think that's why, because he's such a proponent of not showing anything, He never showed the shark until he had to. I wonder if this is why Steven Spielberg eventually ditched out on this movie. He was attached as like an executive producer.
Yeah.
Is that the idea? And he like walked away. He has to be removed. Something like that.
Yeah, that definitely happened. There's also rumors on the IMDb that's not trivia about Luke Wilson's name. There's actually trivia saying that he possibly directed some scenes because he was so dissatisfied with the cut or whatever. But that's never been substantiated one way or another. I imagine he just walked away from the project because it doesn't look like Steven Spielberg really had a hand in this.
No, I mean, no, I'm not saying in any way it looks like he did, but I'm saying that's why maybe, you know, like he took a look at this cut and was like, are you kidding me? Like, look how fucking awful this is.
Well, Jan de Bont, I mean, he's all spectacle, and that's the problem. I mean, like, that's, if you look at his resume, it's Twister, it's Speed 1 and 2.
Yeah. The Speeds.
The Speed Saga. Mm-hmm. But look, those movies are all about, like, oh man, look at the big explosion.
He's the DP on fucking Die Hard. Like, I mean, that's exactly what kind of school of thought he's coming from.
And I don't know how he got this project. It's really a bad mismatch.
Mm. No, it absolutely is. Let's get into, just to kind of start talking about the tail end of this flick here. We teased it a little bit a few minutes ago, but the shit twist. There is a shitty fucking twist in this movie.
It doesn't even make any fucking sense.
No. So throughout the flick, Lily Taylor's like piecing together this story about this child killer and all this crap.
In what I like to call Resident Evil cutscenes.
Yeah,
like,
it's a Resident Evil cutscene. Explain what you mean by this.
Not the movies. If you ever played a Resident Evil game, especially like the original ones, you'll always go into a room and there'll be a book. And you sit down and like you have to flip through somebody's journal and certain words are highlighted.
That's what I hate about those games. It's like, oh, pretty cool. I get to shoot some zombies. And it's like, well, now you got to solve this riddle or move around this giant puzzle.
Oh, God.
And it's just like, let me kill things.
Exactly. I was scared before. Now I'm just fucking bored, dude.
Totally. And that's so she's got a big research scene. She, of course, pulls back a bookshelf and there's a hidden office that this fucking kid toucher.
Yeah, he's got like his inventory of kids.
Yeah, totally.
He's like balancing his checkbook, but with babies.
Could we call it a kidventory?
Yes.
It is a kidventory, absolutely. So she's like thumbing through the pages of this kidventory, you know, and she's like becoming more and more horrified.
Look at all these beautiful names. I gotta save these babies. Oh, Abigail lasted till 12.
And she somehow like makes this connection that she was related to the wife of this murderer.
Delusions of grandeur, I think, is how she connects this.
Yeah, totally. And she starts getting this whole thing in her head about, like, you know, they're not related to me, but this is my family. Like, these ghosts are my family now.
No, they're not related to you. And you know what? I'm
apparently
sorry.
The house called her.
Yeah, that's right. The house made a phone call.
The house, I guess, just like hacked into the phone lines. I guess whenever they wired this thing for telephone, it went mad with power. Apparently uses apparently Liam Neeson's voice. I guess he had passed by before. I don't know how the house got Liam Neeson's voice to talk to her on the telephone to come in for this study.
The house is doing a bad Irish brogue.
Yeah. Maybe she just got prank called by a drunk Irishman.
you want to participate in the slape study, do you? Well, just come to here at this particular time and there's going to be people there to let you in.
You don't want to be a modern day slave for your sister, do you? Come to the slape study.
But if you didn't call me Liam Neeson, who did?
It's such a glossed over detail. Like, it's in the middle
of an action sequence.
Yeah, Owen Wilson's trying to drive a car into the gate to, like, set them free because they all want to get out of the house. And she's like, why did you ever call me for this study in the first place or whatever? And he's like, I never called you for the study. The first time I talked to you was when we met at this house. And it's just like a weird, like, oh, what? But then it just turns back to him smashing a gate and no one ever mentions it again.
Yeah. The best part about that scenario is like, the house gets a lot spookier towards the end, as you might imagine. The first casualty of the movie is Liam Neeson's cell phone. At an hour and 23 minutes, the first death is Liam Neeson's cell phone shattering. But like, they're trying to get out of the house. Like, holy shit, let's finally get the fuck out of this house, right?
Yeah.
And she, you know, like Liam Neeson's trying to go to the gate, and like, oh my God, it's locked because you have to be locked in for some reason. And
you know, instead of using Liam Neeson's car to break it, Owen Wilson runs to Lily Taylor's car for whatever reason.
Just her shitty little, like, you know, Dodge Dart type whatever.
This car's worth considerably less money. Let's use it.
If anyone doesn't, you know, if anyone's not going to miss anything, it's this fucking car.
I'm not going to use a Mercedes. Are you crazy? I mean, there's ghosts and all, but get real.
Honestly, just real quick, if you want to blame anyone for all the deaths that wind up happening in this movie or whatever, blame Bruce Dern.
Oh, absolutely.
He locked that gate like a jerk.
He runs a tight ship, goddamn.
It would be great if at the end of the movie, it was a fucking, because honestly, Bruce Dern has this face. If it was a Scooby-Doo ending and it was fucking Bruce Dern the whole time, like, he has the face.
They pull off his face and it was him. He was Crane the whole time.
Yeah, the creepy innkeeper that, you know, like, fucking, because he was trying to make a development deal or whatever. It's always a fucking development deal.
Yeah, it's something to do with land. Oh, absolutely.
How is it that you make so much money because a house may or may not be haunted? Someone explain the fucking economics of that to me.
The Scooby-Doo economics?
Yes, the Scooby-Doo economics of fucking a house's property going way up because it's haunted.
Well, no, I think it's that they're trying to do these hauntings so that they don't try to buy the house.
Oh, so they drive the price down so they can get it on the cheap.
I'll never sell to anybody. Like, that's always that's the thing. It's not the spookier the house is, the more it's worth.
I hope not.
It's just these crotchety old fucks don't want to sell their houses to the land developers.
I'm sure there's a market you could sell your haunted houses to. I'm sure there's someone out there that would pay good money for a haunted house.
Some fucking sick tickets that just want to live where there was like a mass murder.
Yeah.
You move into Lily Taylor's old house. Stop fucking, you whore. You're not my daughter, but still, I don't care.
Can I return this apartment? It's not quite got the ghost I was looking for.
Yeah, it's more of a belligerent ghost, which I'm not crazy about.
This ghost doesn't turn me on as I thought it would.
It's a lot of errands. I can't handle it.
You honestly gotta go to the store. I need my milk.
Get me the low-fat milk. If it's not the low-fat, I'll send you back.
Honestly, I would take a fucking Scooby-Doo twist ending over this I'm related to all the ghosts endings.
Definitely.
Because here's the thing. She starts, like, yelling at, like, the Hugh Crane ghost finally comes out of his painting and he's all pissed
off. He's a huge ghost.
He's a big old, like, giant ghost for no reason whatsoever.
Because he's got a giant house. You gotta
spread out a bit.
And he's also the end guy at the end of this fucking shitty video game, you know, Castlevania or whatever.
That's true.
So she's like, get away from all these kids. Not this time, Grandpa. Blah, blah, blah. I'm back.
It's not about them. It's about family. It's always been about family. It's about Carolyn and the children from the mill so you could hear their voices. Family. Well, I'm family, Grandpa, and I've come home.
Yeah, no, she does. She calls him Grandpa.
And he groans at that, just like I did.
like all the fucking not packed theaters did when that line was given. Like, she's got this whole little monologue about, like, I'm here and I'm not leaving. You don't scare me, blah, blah, blah.
The babies need their mother.
Here's the thing, and I know that Lily Taylor's character has very low self-esteem in this movie, and that's, like, pretty, like, that's, like, the first thing Liam Neeson says. He's like, oh, she has obviously clearly a case of low dependency disorder and low self-esteem. It's like, wow, that sucks.
Yeah, she'll be perfect for my experiment.
He didn't read that off her file. He just looked at her.
He looked at her fucking shitty blue jeans. Like, oh, this girl doesn't care about herself at all.
What a sad sack. She'll be perfect.
But if I'm a living human being and there's just a bunch of fucking baby ghosts that need to be sent back to wherever, that's fucking spilled milk, man. I'm getting out of that house, and it's the end of it. I don't care. Like,
right.
I'm sorry. Like, I hope the next person comes along as a better person than me, but...
But here's why she also feels this attachment towards these baby ghosts, is because she makes this comparison a lot throughout the movie, which is that she considers the time she spent taking care of her mother, yeah. right, this 11 years, as I was living in purgatory. Yeah. So she can relate to all these ghosts that haven't been able to move on.
What do you mean, purgatory? I'm not fun enough for you.
Oh, it was so bad living under my roof again. Well, guess what? You did it for 19 years before that and didn't say a fucking peep about it then.
You know, Lily Taylor, I think there's no cable in purgatory.
We watched movies. The Price is Right. Don't you remember?
God, how much better would The Haunting have been with this belligerent mother ghost in it? So let's bring it around here to wrap things up. So she frees the kid ghosts because she instructs the house.
Yeah, she instructs the house to unleash the demons that are in the doors.
There's just some demons in the architecture,
that take him to hell, or like, which is really just shoving him onto a concrete wall, not concrete, like a metal wall, and like he fuses to it and becomes like part of the demon ornament. Wall.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. We're actually skipping over the one and only good scene in this movie.
That is very true. We are,
All right. We'll dog-ear this discussion about the ending to just talk about the one thing that is worthwhile in this movie that I'm sure you could just find on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, you were the one who was seeing this for the first time tonight, so why don't you explain?
Like, the whole movie, like we said, there's no body count. There's no, like, real atmospheric horror. So you're just like, what the fuck is going on with this movie? And just, like, why am I even – there's no payoff to anything except when Lou and – they're, like, trying to break into – trying to break out of the house. They're, like – they're stuck in the house. They're throwing chairs into the windows, and they're getting stuck, and, like, the ghosts are fucking with him. So Luke Wilson just starts fucking shit up, and the ghost throws him onto a carpet, and the carpet sucks him into the fireplace.
Yeah.
And there's a previously set up, like, pendulum, I guess you would call it.
Right, it's the flue for the chimney.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I don't know how chimneys work.
It turns one way, it opens so air can get up.
Most people on this podcast aren't chimney rich.
So the flue is this big lion's head, and it just, like Mortal Kombat, just fucking knocks Owen Wilson's fucking head clean off.
Oh, it's a clean cut, man.
Yeah, there's no, it's bloodless, too, which is a big thing.
And Liam Neeson just, like, looks away a little bit and is like, ugh.
He kind of saw it coming for some reason.
Yeah, he's like, oh, the fool. You know, like, that's all he gives as far as grief is concerned. And, you know, I can picture all the, like, computer animation dudes on staff being like, so listen, Mr. DeBall, we've got this great thing set up where when the big lion's head flu hits him in the head and it rips his head off, there's this ridiculous amount of fatality-esque blood going around. Yeah. And he was like, you know, fellas, why don't we tone it down a little bit? Because there's just nothing there. And I'm sorry. Like,
totally bloodless.
If your head gets ripped off, blood's shooting out of the stump.
Yeah, but there's none of that. But what's funny about right after that, that's, I guess, intense horror scene, is there's the for some reason, it, like, explodes outward the fireplace, and there's all these baby bones and skeletons just raining down.
It rains baby skeletons.
Yeah. It vomits baby bones from the fucking little crypt there.
So then the big bad ghost of Hugh Crane gets shoved in the wall. The little ghost babies get to go fly away.
They all fly to heaven. Oh, they all fly out. And for whatever reason, somewhere in this battle of wills, Lily Taylor's body has been, like, pressed up against a door.
Yeah, she fuses too with the door.
Kind of, yeah. And then she, like, drops down. And for kind of no reason, she's just dead. And her soul just comes out of the body, and she flies away with all her little baby ghosts to, you know, be a ghost with them.
Oh, good. You're in heaven now. Now you can fucking take care of me here. Finally, my heaven bedpan is filthy.
She still has bladder problems in the afterlife.
Nothing's white on this cloud.
God. That's gross.
It is grotesque, but it's true, because a woman like that, not even in the afterlife is she getting the fucking peace that one deserves, because she's just that terrible of a person.
Before we go around, I kind of want to do, like, an in defense of this movie.
Okay.
Because I read, I was trying to, you know, because some movies, you know, people like them, people don't.
Sure.
So it's all subjective art. So I checked out IMDb's user reviews, and I checked out these two 10 of 10 star reviews. So
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Was these, one written by Jan de Bon?
No, they were written by Vortex 6 and Misty Fairy.
Oh, so, those guys. Okay.
So I'll start with Vortex 6. He's more articulate. This film has gotten some terrible reviews from the critics. Ignore them. This version of The Haunting isn't the best scary movie I've ever seen, but there are enough genuinely hair-raising moments in the film to make it worth watching. The experience was believable, with good chemistry between all the characters. The sets were to be experienced, not described. The music.
What are you fucking talking about?
Oh, please continue.
We would go down the vortex. And the musical score did a wonderful job of supporting and augmenting the action on the screen. Some critics would go on about audience laughing at the action on the screen. Well, some parts were intended to be funny.
It was the whole thing?
It was here's him explaining it. It was like being on a haunted house ride at a county fair and should be enjoyed as such.
No, that's not what I'm paying $10 to go see.
Despite the occasional popcorn munching and general chatter, the spooky moments popped out of nowhere and definitely got our attention when the specter of Hugh Crane, the film's biggest baddie ghost, comes booming out of his 20-foot portrait at the top of the staircase. Some of us almost came out of our seats.
Some of us were always roused to sleep.
The effects of the final scene are worth the price of admission alone. Don't let a lot of bad press and jaded critics keep you from enjoying this film. It's not classic cinema, but it's still an enjoyable ride nonetheless.
What an asshole.
You know what? If I want to go to a fucking Podunk County Fair, I'll go to a Podunk County Fair.
Totally. Because that's...
This is an 80 million Podunk County Fair.
It's the most expensive haunted house ride a county fair has ever seen.
There is actually that one scare that we mentioned was very much like that. Like, there, it's the first time you see the baby crypt, and like she looks in, and a big skeleton sits up, and it goes.
Yeah, no, like,
it's just like the shitty fucking stock noise.
Like, it's like because she opened it, it pops out. It's like automated.
Yeah, it was.
No, it's a shitty Jack in the Box skeleton. All right, what's this other fucking?
This one's much shorter, and it's kind of funnier. Okay, Misty Fairy says, "I'm a big fan of ghostly movies. I've seen many. While The Haunting may seem low budget." $80 million.
No, not at all. That's not my complaint.
I still think it's a great movie. I've watched it over and over to see if I missed anything the first time around. LOL.
What are you missing? LOL, by the way.
Right. This movie slow is a fucking crawl. It's not it's flying
it's
by.
It's slow as a dead baby crawl. The actors and actresses have done a great job as well. My favorite being Nell and Jake. There's no Jake. I think she means Luke. I think.
Yeah, Jake. Maybe you should watch it one more fucking time.
I think I would have to say that I disagree with some of the others. This movie was very entertaining, and it gave information on a well-known house. I'm not all that sure, but if this was based on a true story, but if it is, well, I would love to visit that house and see if it's really haunted by. And see if it's really haunted myself. I plan on getting this on DVD so I can keep watching it. Thanks for listening, LOL. Have a great day.
Are you kidding me? No.
I guarantee you this person hacked in and put in the fucking Luke Wilson comment. Just like, have a great day. I know my ideas maybe seem wrong to you, but I have a lot of fun with this movie. Aren't movies fun?
Some people should just be banned from the fucking internet. Like, that person is one of them. All right, so let's go around. Steve, would you tell anybody to see this movie?
No, I wouldn't at all. One more haunted house movie that I want to sneak in that's a really good movie, which I almost want to do for this podcast because it's so fucking batshit, but it's actually a really good movie. It's The Entity. Early 80s Barbara Hershey movie where she gets raped by a ghost. And there's more to it than that, but it's like a fucked up movie.
Yeah, correct. Totally agree. Eric, would you recommend this movie?
No, not at all. I would say check out Ghost with Patrick Swayze.
No, yeah, that's totally fair. That's also a movie in where the bad guy gets dragged to hell by demons. Yeah. So You're dead, Willie. Oh God, that's so fucking great. That fucking Willie Lopez. What a sleaze. No, I would not recommend this movie either. Fucking House of the Devil, The Shining. I definitely want to see Insidious and The Changeling with George C. Scott. Rent that movie instead.
Still not enough Bruce Dern. Not even enough goddamn Bruce Dern in the conversation. We fucked it up too. That's the problem.
Yeah. I got a question. Have you been? Have you at home been listening to this show since the haunting?
Good question.
Write it in the mailbag. Tell me what's your life like.
Yeah.
What changes have you seen since the haunting?
WeAllHateMovies@gmail.com. And are you still taking care of your invalid mother? And did she die? And then did you go into a sleep study to see a haunted house or whatever?
A fake sleep study.
Oh, it's a fake story. Like rats in a maze, Eric. I'm going to trick you all, you stupid fucks.
You're going to be taken.
In
my con.
I'm going to take you into my dreams. So.
Ooh, Liam Neeson as Freddy Krueger.
Dude,
me
there you better go. Than Jackie Earl Haley.
Oh,
easily.
Of course. I love killing children. Two, Freddy's coming for you.
Oh, but I won't do any fucking one-liners, that's for sure.
No way, dude. No, it's a straight Freddy Krueger.
What's that? Your daughter touched my penis.
That's apparently a plot to a movie I haven't seen. Directed by Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, I told you about this, right? It's like The Good Mother or something.
Yeah, that's been on.
Diane Keaton and Liam Neeson like are lovers, and like she's a divorcee, and like...
No. The little girl has to touch my penis, and I said, okay.
Yeah, it's one of those...
What?
It's one of those, like, We Hate Movies back burners, like, would anyone listen to that?
The answer is no. It's a Thursday release at best.
It sounds disgusting. Yes. And I read Ebert's review.
Yeah.
And it was like, and then Liam Neeson said, I'm going to touch it.
Oh,
and
Roger was writing in Liam Neeson's voice?
I can't believe this movie got made. 3 stars.
Only 3 out of 5 stars.
I wasn't taken with the premise.
So our reruns keep going.
They keep on chugging, man.
Because we just, you know, as much time as possible to just kind of lay easy, getting ready, getting amped up for WHM Season 7.
I'll see you in City Island, brother.
You in that diaper. Steve in the talking diaper. There's a cartoon I'd watch.
You know, bite the bullet. It's Silver Bullet.
Oh. Next week, we're talking vampires. No, we're talking werewolves. With Gary Busey, man. So next week, Stephen Kingtown. We're coming for you. Until then, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Stephen Seda.
Eric Siskin.
Take it easy.